Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome you. Welcome to the full year results 2017. We are a small group today to the recent developments. Let's welcome today, and I will now hand over to Bernhard, who will give an overview of Biotest year, last year, and then Michael, the financials, and then again Bernhard.
Thank you, and welcome also from my side. Last year it was really an exciting year. It was a lot of up and downs. And let's start with the end of the year. For us, it was we were very pleased that finally we made our guidance. This was an adjusted guidance, as you know. And I come to this point a little later. So most of our time last year we spent with the discussion and the takeover by Greant. They made an offer in April. Then everything went smooth initially. So we got also approvals from the relevant antitrust authorities and also from the Deutschen Außenwirtschaftsamt. And then all of a sudden, you know, this discussion with CFIUS, the Committee of Foreign Investments in the United States, came up. And this kept us very busy. But at the end of the day, it worked out. But during that discussion with CFIUS, we had to agree, and we agreed, that we are going to transfer our U.S. Plasma centers from BPC, Biotest Pharmaceuticals Corporation, to a U.S. trust for divestiture. We signed an agreement with a potential, with a buyer, so we have a signed purchase agreement. But the deal needs to be closed, so there are the FTC approval and also CFIUS review ongoing. CFIUS asked us that we put our U.S. assets in a U.S. trust in the interim. Okay, the sales from continuing operations, and Michael will go much more in detail later. We have sales of around about 380 million euro and an EBIT for the continuing operation of minus 9.3 million. And there was a main event, and this happened in March. This was exactly, so we became aware of the situation in March, and it was one day before we signed the business combination agreement with Greant. It was one day before. So we were shocked, and so we said, okay, we cannot sign this. We cannot sign a business combination agreement. We need to inform Greant about that. So we disclosed all the information to Greant. We discussed with them. And then, you know, as I said, okay, this is a one-time event. You know exactly what happened. And so they signed the business combination agreement and made the offer a couple weeks later. But the albumin recall had a really relevant impact on us last year. And also in 2017, we sold finally our BPC therapy business to ADMA Biologics. So we made the announcement in the beginning of the year, in January 2017, and the closing of this BPC divestiture of the therapy business occurred in June 2017 to ADMA Biologics. So we got shares, and we sold, we made an asset deal. So we transferred the rights for Bivigam, NABI-HB, and our manufacturing facility in Boca Raton. And just the rationale behind that, you know that we had losses in the United States in therapy business in the years before in the range of 20 to 30 million US dollars. And last but not least, this is the most important thing for us, that we are progressing with our Biotest Next Level project. And this is related to products and also the facility. Okay, now how does it look like? How is our business will be structured and reported? You see on the left side, continuing operations, that's Biotest AG. We have still our affiliates in the European countries, 8 affiliates, and we have 19 plasma collection centers in various countries. And continuous operations, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, everything is now for the time being under the US Trust, but the proceeds and the earnings from this part will go to Biotest. As soon as we shut down the trust, as soon as divestiture is completed. So in the US Trust is PPC, and PPC contains and has 22 plasma centers in the United States, and we have 41% shares in ATMA. And you can ask why 41%? There was a capital increase in October, November 2017. We committed to participate in this capital increase with 12.5 million. The share price versus capital increase was 2.15 US dollars, and today the share price is 4.90. Okay, so it's an important thing is, you know, therefore we mentioned it here. We will focus, of course, now after we had to divest our plasma centers in the United States, we will continue and we will accelerate the expansion of plasma donation centers in Europe. So we opened 4 centers last year and another one in January 2018. So 3 new plasma centers in Hungary and 2 in Czech Republic. So overall, we have now 19 centers. Okay, CREAT, so what happened and what's going to happen? The closing happened on January 31st, 2018. All conditions have met, and also the CFIUS approval was there. So CREAT owns around about 90% of the voting shares and 2% of the non-voting shares. Tiacheng International, or Tiacheng Germany, the company who acquired basically Biotest, announced on February 8th that they are assessing, they're doing investigation whether there will be a domination and profit and loss transfer agreement with Biotest. It's important to say it's just an investigation, and you know it takes around about half a year before there can be any conclusion. So there are also other alternatives. It's not a clear path forward. There are other alternatives under discussion. And from the operational level, of course it makes perfect sense that we start to work on synergies between the British company, between PPL, and also with the Chinese company, Ra Shanghai. Okay, and here, just I thought it's maybe interesting, or informative. It's informative to see, you know, how, is it complementary or not? In our opinion, it's very complementary. If you see Ra Shanghai, Ra Shanghai basically has only revenues in China. China is the number one plasma company in China. They sell also a little bit in some areas close to China. Then let's go to BPL. BPL has 41 plasma centers in the United States and also a therapy business in the United States. So let me see the colors. You know, did we change the colors? It's the light blue is North America, right? Okay, so this is mainly from plasma centers, and the other part includes also therapy business in the United States. Most of the therapy business of BPL is in the United States. So they have two entities, one US entity and one British entity. In the US entity, it's mainly plasma, and in the British entity, is therapy business, but most of the therapy business is in the United States. And here, that's an advantage because we do not have any more therapy business. So it's very clear that that this is complementary. And Biotest, you know, here we have our business in Europe, South America, Middle East, Africa. So what we see is what we see is it's very complementary, and this is what we like to work on. Okay, just to give you also a little overview about the potential of the Chinese market here. If you just look at the consumption of the use of the of these immunoglobulins also or on the coagulation factors, here you see China. And China is using round about, less than half gram per immunoglobulin as in European countries, and almost of only one-fifth, only 20% or 30% of what's used in the United States per patient, per population. And it's even more extreme when you look at the coagulation factors. You know, the use of the coagulation factors in China compared, so it's an eightfold or six or sevenfold difference compared to the other countries. And one thing is for sure, you know, if you look at the prediction for the Chinese market overall, in the entire pharmaceutical business, the growth rate is much higher. And the coverage in healthcare insurances is increasing. So here we see really the opportunity to get better access to the Chinese market, but on the other side, you know, to grow with the Chinese market.
Now we change speaker and also the subject, turning back to the 2017 numbers and figures. Most of them have already, at least the key figures, have been published already in our ad hoc announcement, but nevertheless, it might be helpful to get some more details. As Bernard just explained, as we had decided to divest our U.S. business in order to solve the CFIUS issues, in order to come to the takeover, the effectiveness of the takeover offer, it was clear for us that the U.S. business has to be characterized in our books as discontinued operations, and we would continue then with a continuing business without U.S. activities. And following this rule, you see that we achieved $378 million in sales, but suffered a loss of $9.3 million in our continuing operations. On the other side, the U.S. business, mainly selling plasma, you know, was, as you can see, positive with $27.3 million EBIT, with sales of $163.1 million. And if you add both together, continuing and discontinuing operations, you will come to the $18 million in EBIT, which is, as we had given in our guidance, in the range between the $16 and $23 million euro EBIT, as we have told for continuing and discontinued operations at in April of last year. So having said that, we have reached our EBIT guidance as announced. We should share with you also some more details with regard to our other lines of the income statement. You see that the financial result, taxes and income from joint ventures also increased the loss by another 7.1 million. So the earnings after tax from continuing operations ended with a loss of 16.4 million. The earnings after tax from discontinued operations has been positive, as I showed you the positive EBIT. So we add back 12.9 million so that the earnings after tax for the total group ends up with a loss of 3.5 million, which is nevertheless very much less and lower than in the year before. Now, to see a little bit into the composition of the loss, you will immediately recognize that it's driven by the fact that we're heavily investing in the Biotest Next Level, not only in the build-up of the facility, of the ramp-up of the facility, but also in those 53.9 million, roughly 45 million are included for developing the three new products we are going to produce in the new Biotest Next Level facility. So this increase in costs for this future project has substantially, of course, reduced the overall EBIT, as I said, in total by 54 million. In addition to that, we have spent 7.6 million in the development of monoclonal antibodies, which was less than in 2016 but nevertheless, there are still ongoing clinical studies, so that's the reason why we still have spent here some considerable amounts of money in order to continue the development. You see also the EBIT effect of the recall of human albumin. It's a net figure, 22.9. Has included already a reimbursement of the insurance company of 5 million, so the cross value was 28 million as EBIT reduction in 2017. And also we had, of course, costs and expenses in connection with the takeover by CREAT. We have paid investment banks. We had to involve a lot of lawyers and other consultants, especially in order to try to solve the CFIUS issue, and if you have ever dealt with American lawyers, you will see immediately why this amount of 11.5 million is so huge. So if we would exclude those one-time effects, we would also take not into consideration the Biotest Next Level and the monoclonal antibody business. So our standard business, that's what we are achieving with selling our today's produced products, you know, you'll be on the same level as in the year before in the mid of 80s as adjusted EBIT without those one-time effects or without those investments into our future activities. Now, if you look at the sales development, as you can see, the overall sales number was smaller than the year before, mainly driven by the fact that we had not been able to sell albumin. That's mainly the main reason for this reduction. And we have only a slight increase in rest of Europe due to the positive sales development of pentaglobin in Europe. If you look at our balance sheet, it's not surprising that the total assets number went up, mainly driven, of course, by our investment, our heavily CapEx in Biotest Next Level, and that explains why the non-current assets went up quite substantially. If we then look at the cash flow situation, we had achieved 34.4 million as operating cash flow. We increased our working capital by 12 million, so that's the reduction of our cash flow. We spent 4.1 million for paying interests and taxes, so that the remaining cash flow from operating activities, including changes in working capital, amounts to 18.3 million in the end. Now, coming to the guidance. Some of you might be disappointed to see that we forecast for 2018 only a very small increase in sales in the range of a middle single-digit percentage number. The reason is simply that we are operating close to full capacity in Dreieich, so there's really not much that can be produced more and can be sold more in 2018. So it will be a small effect by increasing our hyperimmunoglobulin sales in 2018. But with all other products, we, as I said, are operating at full capacity, so that we really have to wait till the new facility of BNL goes online and we can produce more products and can sell more products. Again, of course, since BNL has to be completed, we have to commission the plant and have to start ramp up it. And, of course, we have to continue our clinical development projects with regard to IgG next generation, trimodulin, and fibrinogen. Currently, we have three phase 3 studies are running and more patients are included week by week. So the costs will go up so that we are expecting to spend between 60 and 70 million for Biotest Next Level. You recall that in 2017, the number was 54 million, so we increase those expenses, those costs, by another 15 to 20 million. And that brings us then to an EBIT of continuing operations in the range of 10 to 12 million. And to make it very plausible, if you start with the loss of 9.3 in 2017, add back the 23 million for the albumin recall, which shouldn't occur in 2018 again, and we won't spend another 11.5 million for a takeover procedure. So if you add back those one-time effects on top of the loss of 9.3, you end up with 25 million roughly, and then you see the increase in our Biotest Next Level expenditures by 15 to 20 million. So you have the bridge, you know, the reconciliation to the 10 to 12 million we are forecasting for 2018. To get to that, we will follow our strategy to drive the organic growth with significant capacity and process investment in Bayern-L, as I just explained, you know, spending 60 to 70 million to broadening our product portfolio, to add with trimodulin and fibrinogen really two complete new products to the product portfolio. We're doubling our production capacity, so we are just inventing Biotest new on the other side of the street right now, and those of you who have driven by our site in Dry Ice, you will see that the building is almost completed from the outside, but now we have, as I said, to commission the plant and to ramp up the facility and to get the validation and the authorization to operate this facility as a pharmaceutical factory production site. Of course, doing this with the new production processes will also lead to improved yields. So we end up having additional products from every liter of plasma. And those of you who are following us for a longer time know that plasma is the most expensive part of our production costs. 60% of our production costs are driven by our plasma costs. And if you can get more of 1 liter plasma, of course, revenues as well as profits are increasing, and that's the aim of this Biotest Next Level project in total. We will capitalize on new product opportunities with strong in-house R&D capabilities, and Bernhard Ehmer will give you some more details just after this slide here, focusing on IgG next generation fibrinogen and the IgM concentrate, which we are calling trimodulin. And on top of that, also, that has been mentioned before, we will start to analyze and implement potential synergies with the British sister company, BPL, and Shanghai RAAS for the time being. Since the antitrust procedures in the UK is still ongoing, we are not allowed to start those analyses with BPL, so we have to be patient a couple of weeks more before we can really get into this kind of identifying and then implementing and realizing synergies with BPL first and Shanghai RAAS then a little bit after. And having said that, I would like to invite Bernhard to give us some more information about research and development projects.
Good. Here, like I said, on one side, you know, in the focus are the BNL projects. And, of course, we are doing for our existing products, hyperimmunoglobulins, also for hemoptin. Hemoptin is a factor 8, important one. We are doing life cycle activities. So, and so 2020-21, we will have the IgG next generation on the market for the key indications. Of course, also albumin, you know, because when we are producing more, fractionate more in the new facility, we will have also an additional albumin available and approved coming out of the facility, and a new formulation, new strengths for hemoctin. And we are filing all the time, you know, we get every second or third day, you know, we get approval, reapprovals for hyperimmunoglobulins in certain markets, so life cycle. It's important that we get, we have our products available in 70 markets in the world. And so we are submitting life cycle projects, we are submitting new data, and so we get renewals of approvals or new approvals in other countries. So and this allows us that we have a moderate growth. Otherwise, you know, it's stable. You know, just through new approvals in certain countries, we can slightly increase our sales. So, and 2020-21, we will have these products on the market, and then for the very important one, IgM, it's called trimodulin and fibrinogen, into indications should then come in 2021-22. And here we have promising hemophilia A therapeutic in development. And so this seems to have an extremely good profile, which could also be very complementary to the new Roche compound in hemophilia. Okay, a short update on this. Okay, I think you know the details on IgG, so I'm really focusing only on the progress of the clinical development. In last year, we completed the recruitment of all adult patients in the study. So we stopped the accrual because it went very fast. We stopped it, and we just wanted to focus only on children and to have a certain number of children also in this study. And this would then, at the end, we aim that we can avoid a so-called post-approval commitment study with authorities, that we do not have to do an extra study in children. So we want to include enough children at a certain age level in the ongoing study, you know, that we get the full approval for all age groups and have no further commitments with the authorities afterwards. Then the other, that's mandatory only in Europe, that we do also in a certain setting, also the so-called ITP, the thrombocytopenia study, to accrue patients, and the recruitment is ongoing, and we expect that this is also completed this year. And in neurologic indications, we had discussions with the FDA, and this was also an interesting one last year. So it went backwards and forward. One time I said, okay, your study design is good. Next time I said, your study design is not good. So and at the end, they apologized. You know, I never heard that the FDA apologizes for recommendations they gave. So we are working, and of course we are looking for other indications for IgG, and an important one is a neurologic indication. So we will move forward and, of course, start also this study. Then fibrinogen. There are two phase 3 ongoing. One is in patients, there are only a small number of patients with a genetic defect. So they have this genetic defect. And so we are running this study. And we planned, and we announced, we already started, first patient has been included in the study. This is an interesting study. So around about 200 patients will be included. Patients will be included which undergo major surgery. And during surgery, they have to have a blood loss of at least 1 liter. And the first factor which is diminished when you are heavily bleeding is fibrinogen. Today, usually, in a lot of cases, patients receive a mix of factors. You know, they receive fresh frozen plasma or other concentrates. But if you go in detail, basically it makes no sense. It makes sense, you know, but it has a higher risk. Yeah, because if you supplement patients with something they don't need really, in our opinion and also in the opinion of a lot of people, it's much better if you just replace a factor which is missing. So, and the first factor which is missing is fibrinogen. So the challenge in the past was, why was it not done on a routine basis? Because if you see that a patient is bleeding severely, you would like to do something as a surgeon. And therefore, they just gave the patients what they had, because there was no diagnostic available. Yes, and this diagnostic needs to be available immediately. You cannot wait for hours when a patient is bleeding to get diagnosis. So now there is a bedside test or is a test available which gives you results immediately, you know, in the operating theater. And so now you can diagnose early, and this is what we are doing in the study. You know, if the patient develops fibrinogen deficiency, they detect this immediately, and then we are going to replace it. So this study is ongoing, and it's in patients with spine surgery. Around about, as I said, 200 patients in European countries will be included. Then with trimodulin, this was a little more challenging. The clinical data were convincing also to the authorities, to the FDA as well as to the European, or to the Paul Ehrlich Institute. So there was a very positive feedback, what I mentioned it already last year, very positive feedback on our phase 2B data. And as I said, do not do any changes, just do exactly in the phase 3 what you did before. But they asked us that we should do a little more in our process development for the manufacturing process. So they indicated, you know, you cannot compare IgM with IgG. And so you need to optimize your processes, and you do include certain, we need also already in the clinic to integrate a certain device for the reduction of certain factors which could have an impact, no one knows, on the patients. So the drug was safe, you know, in the phase 3, everything was safe, but they wanted to have new assays, new tests, and everything needs to be implemented prior of the start of the phase 3. And, you know, we are on the way, everything works, and we are going to start this study, I would say, at the earliest at the end of the year. Because it's some work to do, but then we are at least on the safe side. And with the monoclonal antibodies, I come directly to the point. What we are going to do, we are going to divest or spin it out. So we almost complete all activities. So we are going to finalize this myeloma study. There are still patients on. It's unbelievable. There are seven patients with multiple myeloma on treatment, and these patients are stable forever. You know, so these seven patients, they run smoothly. And it's, also from a, I'm a physician, yeah, I'm a medical doctor by training, and this is extremely remarkable that these patients are still stable. These patients had several treatments before. They failed, they relapsed, and now it's like a routine treatment. These patients are on drug for more than 3 years, 5 years. Okay. Then we did also a study, a small phase 1, 2A, in solid tumors as a single agent, as a monotherapy. There were signs of efficacy, but it's clear it does not work as a single agent. You need to combine it with other therapeutics. That's very, that happens, that's basically the case in oncology anyway. But we decided, you know, that it's not our focus. We are not the experts, and we do not have the means to develop these monoclonal antibodies to the market. So therefore, we decided already 1 or 2 years ago that we complete our activities, and as soon as everything is done, you know, we partner. But now we are clear, we will divest it or we'll spin it out. So we get also in a couple of weeks for the second antibody, for the BT63, data from a phase 2A in lupus erythematosus. You know, and we hope that this will strengthen our package for spin out or divestiture. And BT61 failed in rheumatoid arthritis, and we did some preclinical work, but here we stop, and this will also be part of this spin-out. So the key is, for us, BNL. And this is a manufacturing facility with a power plant. If you look from the outside, and also from the inside, it looks very impressive. Yeah, and in Biotest Next Level, there was also investment in the plasma receiving area and in the laboratory, new virology labs, and also the fill and packaging has been completed. And last year, positive was that we got these building approvals, as well as there was a successful inspection by the Regierungspräsidium, by the competent authorities. So people moved in. Since August, people from our quality department, quality control department, moved into the facility. So it's unbelievable what's happened sometimes. So when we wanted to commission the facility, starting the validation and everything, it's like, it's a funny thing, it's not funny, it's a serious. Then we noticed that there were particles in these pipes. Yeah, and so I do not know how many kilometers of pipes we have in the facility, but these are kilometers of pipes, and we had to inspect with a specialized company, like in medicine, you know, with an endoscope, you know, you went with this. With a kind of endoscope in all these pipes, kilometer of pipes, going through, looking for these particles, and then, you know, at least we knew what it was, where it was, and then we worked with a company together to clean it up. So this took round about 3 to 4 months, mm-hmm. And the good thing is we are done. Yeah. So, but it was really a challenge. Of course, we are working with these companies who did these pipings and all these installations. I assume that they will have to compensate us for these delays and also for this damage. So we did not include anything. But for us, it was more important, the first step, that we get it right. And so the cleaning started immediately, and it's done, and we are back to operations at the end of February. This was a major undertaking, and a lot of colleagues in our company, you know, they did a great job together with this specialty, with this company specializing on this stuff. Okay, now we are back March, you know, we are working on that, we are doing all these installations, you know, media supply, cooling, and that we are that the qualification runs are ongoing. We planned to do it earlier, but, you know, we had this interruption. And also the installation of the process equipment for IgG, IgM, fibrinogen, etc. is completed. And also here, validation and qualification is ongoing. So now coming to the end, you know, what could we expect in the not-too-distant future? That there will be this closure of the BPC divestiture. And this means that then we would get then the proceeds from this divestiture. Okay, we start as soon as possible after we got the clearance from the British antitrust authorities to analyze and implement synergies with BPL and also with a certain delay also with RAAS Shanghai. For us, it's important that we are progressing with BNL, that on one side the building, but on the other side, all the clinical development activities for the three products, like IgG next generation, fibrinogen, pre-modulin. And that we continue to open new plasma collection centers in Europe. Thank you very much. And now we are here for your questions.
Thank you very much. If you do have questions, please... Please, Marietta.
Thank you very much. I actually have a zillion questions, so maybe the best thing to do would be to just ask them one by one, and you just tell me when you want to stop and hand it over to somebody else, and then I jump back in the queue. So the first question, I mean, just on the domination agreement that you're investigating, my original understanding from your press release in January was that this was already supposed to be proposed at the AGM, and now you're talking about a six-month investigation at least before they can even confirm if there is an intention to do it or not, and then presumably after they announce the intention, that could probably take another few months to actually come through with the agreement. So I'm just trying to understand the timelines a bit better, and in particular what we can and cannot expect now at the AGM relating to the domination agreement. That's the first question.
Should we immediately answer that? No, you know, if you want to get the approval of the domination agreement from the shareholders, you need to have the full package of information available, and that includes also an offer to the outstanding shareholders to sell their shares again to the then dominating company. And to do that, you have to do an evaluation of the company, and you have to do all those legal things in order to really have a valid offer that you can then give to the outstanding shareholders again. And those shareholders who then decide not to participate in the second offer to sell their shares to the dominating shareholder, then they will get a guaranteed dividend in the future. And although this dividend has to be named as soon as you're inviting for this special shareholders meeting in order to get the approval for the such a domination agreement. And as you can imagine, since the takeover was effective at the 31st of January, you know, the Tianjin Germany is actually not in a position to really have a new valuation of Biotest AG. This is mainly due to the fact that we have to do the valuation now based on the fact that PPC would no longer be part of Biotest Group. So we have to do all our planning and things again for this evaluation. And that means it was just too short to put it on the agenda of the annual shareholders meeting, which is scheduled for May 15th. But nevertheless, as soon as the shareholder has the intention to think about this domination agreement, he has to announce it. We have done, though, in this ad hoc announcement. And the effect of this announcement is that the share price, you know, is almost frozen for valuation purposes. So the next offer you have to make is then has to at least match the 3 months average weighted share price before the time you announced this intention to conclude a domination agreement and transfer profit and loss transfer agreement. And that's the reason why it just takes time to get to this final decision of Tianjin Germany to really ask for this domination agreement.
Yeah, no, and because I do not want to, so don't think that there would be another announcement. So it's, you know, of course, you know, if with the intention, you know, it's clear that, you know, CREAD or Tianjin Germany, they are assessing, and then there will be decision whether they go for it or not. Yeah, so and this everything needs to happen before August 6th. Yeah, just make 6 months, you know, after this announcement.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but it's also clear, you know, it's not decided. So everyone should be clear, it's not decided. It's the intention to look into it, to make an assessment, but it's not a decision.
Okay, so just to be clear, basically, on or before August 6th, we will learn whether they do or do not have the intention to make to enter into a domination agreement. And if they do come up with the intention, there will be a press release saying we now intend to do this. And then, you know, there will still be a time lag. There will be probably an EGM and a time lag between this announcement and the actual publication of the offer. I mean, how would the timelines then work in terms of coming out with an offer and then inviting people to the EGM?
So it needs to be, if it would happen, then it needs to happen, you know, in front of this the shareholders, you know, this what is it?
Extraordinary
shareholder meeting. And this would happen at the latest in the beginning of August. So this is 6 months after this press release, in initial press release.
And then, I mean, when do they actually need to then come out with
six
the actual offer? 6 weeks before August 6th.
Before the AGM. The General shareholders meeting. Yeah.
The next question is obviously highly relevant now that we're thinking about potentially a domination agreement, is your midterm guidance. I think you've said in the past that you're expecting to reach something like $1 billion in sales, but this was, of course, in constant structure by 2020, and that by so after 2022, you were expecting an EBIT margin of 18%. Is that still roughly right? You know, including all of the divestments that you that are underway or that you're contemplating, like the monoclonal antibodies. And in particular, can you give us a timeline for the 18% margin? Would that be 2023, or is that wide open and it could be 2025 or even 2027? And does that 18% margin actually include all of the R&D expenses you would be expecting to incur at that stage? Because, you know, at the moment, you're basically classifying a lot of R&D expenses as Biotest Next Level, so they're almost looking like a one-off. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, when we're talking about sort of the midterm margins, that that is really inclusive of all of the expenses, like, you know, R&D expenses that you would obviously have to incur in the context of your business to secure the future, that would be included, or would we need to deduct that from the EBIT that's implied in your margin?
Now, when we gave this midterm guidance, as you call it, and mentioning those 18%, we had in mind that at that time we would have an R&D ratio of roughly 8 to 9% of sales. So you don't have to deduct anything else. So we were going on from a run rate of having continuing R&D development costs in the magnitude of 8 to 9% of sales.
Okay, and that guidance still stands. So you're after 2022, you are expecting an 18% margin.
This margin was dependent on the commissioning and the first sales out of B&L. We are in the process of looking into it if it's still valid, because it was based on the fact that we get blood plasma from the United States, because that unfortunately we have to sell BPC, and we have to make sure how we secure the supply of plasma, and if we have the need to buy it otherwise from third parties, maybe with a higher price, so this has to be concluded before we can update a new midterm guidance.
So your basic question is, you know, as soon as this B&L, you know, and this B&L, this case, really it's associated with the expansion of the portfolio.
Yeah.
The B&L includes the expansion of the portfolio, this fibrinogen, IgG next generation, and IgM. And this assumption did not change. With this, with the expansion of the portfolio, with having five products out of 1 liter plasma, you might remember this chart. You know what are the revenue and the EBIT? What is the revenue and profit out of 3 liters per plasma? And how does it change when you have 5 liters? You know, it's almost doubling. You know, it's going up from the revenue is going up per liter plasma from 300 to 550 to 600. And there are only incremental manufacturing costs by that, so the profitability will go up. Therefore, what we said is right. It means that in the midterm, as soon as Biotest Next Level is completed, then the margin will be in the range under the assumption, you know, yes, we will always have R&D. Yeah, we will always have, and if you look at the industry, R&D expenditure ranges, you know, some companies are extremely low. They have 3 or 4% only, but the average is 6 to 8%. And this is also our midterm assumptions post B&L.
Okay, so that basically means that, you know, when you said, you know, we're going to reach that margin after 2022, we should really operate on the assumption, even with all the changes that have happened and all your caveats, that in 2023 you are going to report an EBIT margin of 18%, because my understanding earlier was that Biotest Next Level is effectively completing this year, and, you know, by 2023 you should definitely have very good capacity utilization and no more teething problems, right?
Okay, so it's a ramping up, you know, on one side you need to ramp up.
Yeah,
so when the products are coming not at the same day. Yeah, so the first product which will be on the market is IgG Next Generation, and here we are going for approvals in everywhere in the world, so United States and Europe and other countries. What's going more or less in parallel will be the increased volume of albumin. This will more or less go in parallel. And then, you know, depending on the outcome of the studies, you know, for IgM and fibrinogen, this will come then a year or 2 years after IgG and albumin.
Okay, so is there sort of, you know, can you sort of give us a worst-case timeline when you're going to reach the 18% at the latest? And also, you know, what your new sort of like revenue, what is the sort of new peak revenue level? Or how should we think about your revenues after you've discussed all of these divestments? Is the 1 billion still standing?
We are currently in the process, as you can imagine, we are currently in the process to doing we need to adjust our plans with PPC. Yeah, we are doing our 10-year planning because we have to exclude now everything which was related to the United States. And this is a very recent development. Therefore, don't insist on an exact date. Yeah. So maybe the EBIT can be lower or higher. It depends on the ramp up of IgM, on the ramp up of fibrinogen, and there's a sequence: first IgG albumin, followed by fibrinogen IgM. But definitely, you know, you can also make your calculation. You know, if you just take the numbers with revenue per liter plasma with certain assumptions for pricing, and then it's very clear, you know, that the revenue per liter plasma processed and with a slight incremental manufacturing costs, you know, this has a tremendous impact on EBIT.
Okay, maybe just one question before I maybe hand it over to somebody else and jump back in the queue. In terms of your integration with BPC, so assuming there is not going to be a domination agreement and the preference shares just keep on trading and so forth, how does it work in terms of allocating the synergies that you find by integrating with them? I mean, would they just be allocated 50-50? And after integration with BPC and later Shanghai RAAS, would it even be possible... BPL, yes, sorry. With BPL and later Shanghai RAAS, will it actually in the midterm even be possible to really segregate the businesses analytically enough to actually say what the profit is that accrues to the preference shareholders of Biotest?
That's an excellent question. And this is exactly what's analyzed also. You know, because everything is also related to your question with the domination agreement. You know, maybe there are alternatives. Yeah, and of course, structure is part of this analysis, and therefore also the allocation of synergies would follow the structure. Okay. So structure comes first, and then the allocation of profitability. Therefore, it's not done.
I have a zillion more questions, but maybe I'll give somebody else a chance first. And
any other question?
Shall I just maybe continue? People think about their questions? So the other questions, I mean, it was just sort of a few short-term guidance and modeling questions. One is, what is the proceeds of the divestiture of the U.S. Business once that closes?
You know, if it's closing, then we know it. Up to then, we cannot give you any indication what the proceeds will be.
Okay, and then for the Biotest Next Level charges in 2017 and 2018, can you spec out how much of that is R&D versus other charges?
I mentioned already in 2017, out of the 44 million have been R&D, and the rest is ramp up. And this... the ramp-up will go up a little bit. The R&D portion will stay in the range of 45, 48 million in 2018.
Okay, great, thanks. quick question also on your hemophilia A compound and how that fits with Hemlibra. Just a little bit more granularity there would be great, please. Thank you.
No, this is a Roche compound. This is this circumvents, you know, this basically factor 8, and it's the initial indication will be in patients developing inhibitors and have bleedings. Our compound, also it's very clear that factor 8 will continue to be parts of, not only parts, will be standard care of treatment and will also go together with this molecule. So, and our compound, we are looking to have a molecule with this profile that you can give it subcutaneously. Yeah, this is, if you have ever looked at a patient undergoing treatment for hemophilia, they're always talking about, do I need these injections really every second day or every day? And what's about the volume? If you can give the treatment subcutaneously, it has an advantage. Another advantage is that you do not want to see that patients develop antibodies against factor 8, so-called inhibitors. So we have the technology implemented that we are reducing the immunogenicity of factor 8. And so subcutaneous application, reduction of immunogenicity, and the third one was extended half-life, of course. Yeah, so it's half-life a week or so, more than a week. So, and with this profile, you know, we did these assessments. We worked with other companies which offered these technologies, you know, which are integrated in our molecule. Yeah, and here we are.
Just one more question on Biotest Next Level and sort of the midterm outlook. How much capacity do you actually expect to come on stream in 2019, 2020? And you know, what sort of sales ramp up should we be looking at during that period? I mean, should we just expect sales to grow in line with your capacity, or should we expect you to sort of, you know, to not be overly aggressive because you're just trying to absorb a certain proportion of the growth of the market here? And somewhat related to that, I mean, should we basically assume that for the coming years, EBIT is probably going to continue to be in the range of, you know, 85 to 90 million or maybe 95 million on an underlying basis, because it takes a while before, you know, all of the benefits from Biotest Next Level really come through, and you probably have some, I don't know, some incremental cost teething problems initially. And how should we think about the B&L cost?
Ramp up. Okay, I comment on the ramp up, and Michael comments on the next years. Ramp up. It's a ramp up. If you talk about the fractionation capacity and the ramp up of sales, you know, we expect in our plans it's a ramp up of 3 years. Sorry.
Ramp up in line.
Yes, the ramp. We are not talking about our ramp up. It means sales.
Sales.
Yeah, because we can increase the capacity if the facility is running. We are increasing the capacity, so we are talking about sales ramp up. And short term, you know, Michael will comment. Your question was about the next year. So yes, next years are flat, you know, marginal increasing.
Yeah.
As we have, you know, as long as we have these R&D investments, as long as we have these ramp up costs for B&L without having sales, yeah, then therefore we will see more or less flat EBIT.
And the ramp up cost will go up actually, because, you know, to get the license and market authorization for the products, you have to prove to the authorities that your product has been stable, and you have to produce consistency batches, put them on stability tests for 6, 9, and 12 months, and only after those data for the 12 months stability tests are fine, then you get the market authorization. So you have a full-fledged organization having produced the consistency batches. You have to pay the people over there, but you have for at least 1 year no sales before you get the market authorization and cards can start selling it. So over the next 3 years, you know, ramp-up costs are probably going beyond the 20 million we will spend in 2018.
Okay, so just to be clear, so when you're talking about sort of a 3-year sales ramp-up for Biotest Next Level, we should not expect that to be linear. So 2019, 2020 sales are still going to be something like, let's say, mid-single-digit growth, maybe low, very low.
Out of the existing facility, there will be no new product out of BNL before 2021.
Mm-hmm. 2021, yeah.
But you are expecting to be profit-making throughout, so you don't expect EBIT to... Because, I mean, this year you're expecting 10 to 12 million.
Yeah.
And as the ramp-up costs increase, is there a risk that that could become negative?
No.
No?
No.
Thank you very much.
No, and one thing, you know, it's one thing you need to see things also in this context of this takeover. Yeah? And so Biotest will not be the same Biotest in 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
Let me say 2020. Yeah. So we mentioned PPL, we mentioned Roche Shanghai. And this means, of course, you know, we mentioned it twice here. You know, we will look for strong collaboration synergies with the other companies from Roche Shanghai and BPL. So, and as we did not start yet with this analysis and with this assessment, we cannot predict, but it's important for everyone to know, you know, I would say 2020, 21, it will look different. Yeah, and there are synergies, you know, that's extremely complementary when you look at, you know, just what the different companies are doing. And so, therefore, it's not easy, you know, as I do not, you know, it's not easy what you're going to recommend or what you're going to say. You know, if you just have a pure look at this entity as of today, then it might be wrong. Yeah? It's important, you know, that, you know, you need to bring this into perspective. You know, we have a new majority shareholder, we have sister company, and we mentioned that we are working to identify synergies.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I'm just trying to get to sort of like, you know, analyzing Biotest on a standalone basis or sort of, you know, the basis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it wasn't, you know, if there was no CREA takeover, no BPL synergies and so forth, then would you see a risk that sort of 2019, 2020 could be negative, slightly negative EBIT?
No.
No. Okay, so it would always be in positive territory, but
before
it's going to be a while, it's going to be a number of years before
Correct.
We see meaningful EBIT.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Because
assumption?
Corresponding with the increasing ramp-up cost at the same time, we should have decreasing costs for clinical developments because, as you see, we have already stopped the recruitment of adult patients in one phase 3 study. The others are continuing recruiting, but then they have also reached a plateau where then the additional or the R&D cost should go down. So.
Do we have another question? No? All right. So we have one more? All right, so with this we have come to the end of our today's conference. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you very much for coming and the good questions. And may we invite you for a light lunch next door. And the next results will be on May 15th. Thank you very much.
Good.
Kann er jetzt abschalten.
Sieht er das?